You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everyone, and happy Tuesday afternoon to one and all. Fall is here. It is chilly with rain. It is kind of a gross day here in southeastern Wisconsin. I hope you're faring better wherever you are. And if not, bring that raincoat and bundle up because it is definitely getting chilly. We got a great show today. But of course, as I always like to do, let's start with some of the day's headlines. According to Governor Evers' office, the Wisconsin Food Share Program is set to run out of funding in 10 days. November food assistance for Wisconsin kids, families, and seniors is again in jeopardy, not just because of the big brutal bill, but additionally because of the shutdown. You would think that, food assistance might be one of those, quote, essential functions of government that they would want to make sure is still operating, but nah. Governor Evers today calling on the Trump administration and congressional Republicans to end the federal shutdown, to meet Democrats' demands, to restore the ACA subsidies, to ensure that tens of thousands of Wisconsinites continue to be able to access life-saving and affordable health insurance. This is shocking. It's 700,000 Wisconsinites potentially impacted by this. Again, show some heart, MAGAs, just a little bit. Again, emergency food assistance should not be this difficult to figure out that you probably should be funding. In other local news, a Racine man has been charged with stalking Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Jill Karofsky. This is according to reporting by WISN. He has been charged in Dane County Circuit Court. The man's name is Ryan Thornton. He made his initial appearance yesterday. Prosecutors are pointing to a number of emails that Mr. Thornton allegedly sent to Justice Karofsky. Justice Karofsky has never had any interaction with this man, couldn't pick him out of a lineup, but it seems to be now a very common practice, the harassment of sitting judges and here state court justices. Other local news, this I'll say a little bit on the bright side. Politico recently published their latest poll about what is going on in our congressional district that Derek Van Orten represents. And here's the interesting part. Donald Trump, so this is the third congressional district here in Wisconsin. Donald Trump still has a tiny net positive favorability rating. It's within the margin of error, by the way, so it could be negative. But Trump has a tiny +2 net positivity rating. Ladies and gentlemen, Congressman Derek Van Orten, with all of his emotional irregulation, outbursts, swearing, pushing women in line, lambasting Senate pages for hanging out in the rotunda, seemingly being intoxicated, again, allegedly at various points, you know, all the hallmarks of a really stable congressperson doing the people's good work. Yet DVO is -10. -10 net negative rating. And in the latest fundraising reports, Rebecca Cook has got a goodly amount of money, giving her a good head start in that race. Boy, that was a little bright spot on my daily horizon this afternoon. Also, this, speaking of Derek Van Orten being completely in shambolic, I may call it. Yes, I'm making up that word. The state GOP is also in shambles. Their treasurer has resigned, and someone got a hold of her resignation letter, ladies and gentlemen, and boy, it's a doozy. I want to read you from the former GOP of Wisconsin state party treasurer's resignation letter sent on Sunday. After careful consideration, I have concluded that I can no longer meaningfully contribute to our party's executive leadership team under the current circumstances. The absence of a strategic plan, defined objectives, and measurable outcomes, as well as budgetary issues, have created an environment in which progress is difficult to assess and nearly impossible to achieve. As the saying goes, what gets measured gets done. Unfortunately, without metrics or accountability, it is unclear what we are working toward or what our capacity is to achieve our objective. Just bear with me for one more minute, and I'm going to bring these cows into the barn. Moreover, the internal dynamics of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, particularly the dysfunctional leadership, have made attempts at collaboration increasingly unproductive and discouraging. The lack of transparency, direction, and respect for differing perspectives, or even basic oversight, has fostered a culture that is not only ineffective, but also absurd. End quote. I would like everyone, and my Republican conservative friends, the MAGA voters included, to just take note of the following words describing the Republican Party of Wisconsin. Let's see here. Unaccountable, lacking objectives or a strategic plan, and dysfunctional, a lack of collaboration, a lack of transparency, direction, respect for differing perspectives, a lack of oversight, ineffective, and absurd. Boy, ladies and gentlemen, maybe the state Republican Party needs a little Doge action. I jest, but here's the takeaway. It is a precise reflection of the state of the GOP nationwide. Unaccountable, lacking in oversight, no respect for differing perspectives, no clear strategy, utterly absurd. The reason that it is so is because when you define a political party based on personal loyalty to one man, and you hire people and promote people at state levels and at national levels, not based on their competency or their lifelong commitment to the core values of your party. In fact, when you've traded your party's core values away for, again, this idea of personal loyalty, which becomes the litmus test for, well, everything, the place that you will always end up is a place devoid of competency, devoid of any integrity and commitment to those long-held values, and a place that, according to the now former treasurer of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, a place that is indeed absurd. It is but a symptom of the whole, ladies and gentlemen. Unfreaking believable. With that, it is my pleasure to bring back to the show former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. He's going to be joining me for the first hour. Jim, a pretty rousing indictment of the Republican Party of Wisconsin.
It certainly is. And we have seen, of course, other resignations throughout our nation's history. These are the ones that tell us what's really going on. That's your point, Maggie, right? This is someone who is not only completely at her wit's end when it comes to being able to do her job on a day-to-day basis, but also does not want to go quietly, as an Irish poet once said, into that good night. She is going to tell everyone about what the problems are so that there is no mistaking now and in the future the reasons for departure. And what a commission to the future. You want to save this party? If you want to try to resurrect this office, you need to start from the ground up, as you've just said. It is, again, an important document. It's an important document in the history of America in 2025 for precisely the reasons you just articulated.
It, you know, again, this is one of those things that when I get MAGA supporters on the phone with me, specifically if we're, let's just take the Ukraine-Russia conflict, there's no discernible rhyme or reason to right. Donald Trump's position on that. And we'll get into some of that, I think, tomorrow on this program, because we need to revisit the disastrous meeting on Friday between Donald Trump and President of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky. But the GOP was always the foreign policy hawk party, right? That whether you go back to World War II, you go back to Ronald Reagan, Nixon, pick a GOP president. And it was, yeah, we're going to fight Russia. We're going to fight the Soviet Union. We understand that China is an enemy. Very clear. And they were, frankly, very interventionist. There is no even tiny minutia of that left in the Republican Party. It's been pulled out root and stem and replaced with Taco Trump. Like flippity floppity flip flip flop. And the defense of the isolationist tendencies that seem to undergird Donald Trump is this idea of America first, which makes for a handy soundbite. But the reason that the GOP for a long time was a very hawkish and interventionist party was that they believed that America maintained its status as the leader of the world, that America's first interests were best served by promoting democracies, albeit in incredibly flawed ways, by standing up against authoritarians, by standing up against human atrocities. And the debate was more about like how much intervention should there be, not should there be intervention. Right. All of a sudden, that's gone. It's just one example of the GOP. It's just it can't even be called the GOP. It's not the Republican Party because it has no fidelity to the values and approach of the Republican Party that so many conservatives have known. And I just thought that this resignation letter was basically, it just distilled it right on down. Those things like completely unaccountable, there's no strategic plan, I can't identify the values, it's totally absurd, it's dysfunctional. Yeah, that's what you get when it's the party of Trump. Right. It's just that simple.
Her bemoaning the fact that there are no values when you speak about overseas matters. Again, these are sound bites that remain in our history. Ronald Reagan, Mr. Gorbachev, take down this wall. Richard Nixon going to China. Why only Richard Nixon could go to China? Because of the stridency, identifying China as one of our, if not the major enemy, one of our top enemies on the face of the planet. And we need, yes, to engage with them, but with complete, complete arm's length distance. That was the history of that party.
Bananas. It is, to quote the former treasurer of the Republican Party of Wisconsin, it is absurd. When we come back, Jim Santel and I are going to dig into the Jim Comey indictment as well as his response claiming vindictive prosecution and the facts he's laid out to support that argument. On the other side, stay with us. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Back, everybody. Welcome. If you're just joining us, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined by former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel for the first hour of today's program. Jim, as you and I were tossing around ideas about what to talk about today, we did want to again take a pause. I covered the Ninth Circuit's review of the order that was issued that forbade the Trump administration from deploying National Guard troops in Portland. Oregon is part of the Ninth Circuit, which is a court of appeals. That's a second-level court, right one level down from the Supreme Court. Ninth Circuit yesterday lifted that restriction and said they can send the troops. It was an interesting decision. It was two Trump appointees. There was one judge that dissented yesterday. I suggested that it was highly likely, if not near certain, I'm going to say certain, yes, that the plaintiffs in that case, basically the people of Oregon are nearly certain, again, I'm going to say certain, to ask for an en banc rehearing of the entire Ninth Circuit. En banc means the, all of the court members instead of just a panel of three. And the judge that that dissented yesterday wrote a pretty interesting opinion. She basically begged her colleagues to find their way to make rulings that help restore some fidelity to facts and therefore to help restore some public faith in the law, that the law is supposed to be apolitical. And Jim, you mentioned to me that you had a particular passage that you thought was quite poignant for this right. moment, and I wanted to invite you to share that.
Absolutely. So the two judges on the three-judge panel, obviously trying to support their conclusion, which it is theirs, that there is insurrection, that there is rebellion, that's the language of the statute, or the president is completely unable to administer laws there. What do they cite? They cite that demonstrators shot paintballs at officers, that they shined lights in their eyes, that they threatened officers with knives. That's not to be endorsed, but nonetheless, they threw sticks and stones at them. And yes, indeed, neither Maggie nor I endorses arson, but they set fires. There's no doubt about that as well. Does anyone in within earshot of our conversation today, Maggie, look at that and say that is rebellion, that's insurrection? And yet that's what they cite to suggest that Judge Immergott, who cites all of these other instances of nonviolence and of peace and calm in Portland to support her conclusion, there is no there there. And so Susan Graber does, as you indicate, say this is an absurd decision. We need to look at this again. That's what the en banc review will certainly do. And you'd like to think, Maggie, wouldn't you, that the Ninth Circuit would look at this and say, yes, facts mean something, invocation of the law means something, and you can't come to these conclusions based upon, quite literally, sticks and stones.
Yeah, it's, again, this idea that isolated criminal acts that are attendant to a protest that is overwhelmingly peaceful does not a rebellion make. By the way, Karen Immergut, the judge that entered the original temporary restraining order on the Trump administration, she is a Trump appointee, yes, which is yes. super important to remember here. So I really don't want to hear it from my conservative texters and callers, because a Trump judge said that this is garbage, said that, again, they're making up facts. They're ignoring the law. And that is not good. You can be as ticked off as you want about immigration, but what we have to do if you want to do something about immigration is do it legally. That is what we have in a democracy. We are a system of laws. And an administration that makes up facts, lies every day about said facts, and based on those repetitive ad nauseum lies, then tries to invent a rebellion out of whole cloth to confer upon a president king-like powers. Yeah, that's not supposed to be okay for anybody. So please, save your breath today. I'm not having that fight with any of you conservatives on my text or call lines. And there have been Republican judges that are saying this over and over again, whether it's the invocation of the Alien Enemies Act, Donald Trump's tariff power grab. It goes on and on and on. But all of this traces back to Donald Trump's executive order trying to take away birthright citizenship. And Jim, I cannot imagine, can you imagine, conservatives, if the first thing that Joe Biden did was issue an executive order that declared any personal ownership of weapons to be illegal, and then sent the National Guard to confiscate your weapons? And he did so under the auspices of declaring rebellions and saying, I need to impose martial type law and seize all these weapons because the Proud Boys or the three percenters or these white nationalist groups are armed to the teeth and we can't protect our citizenry. Would that be, those are the equivalent situations, Jim. I don't know how else to explain that.
Absolutely. I used that exact reference, Maggie, in a class I was teaching just this morning to explain that ruling in the CASA case, not only not deciding, first of all, birthright citizenship, but then also saying, oh, by the way, if you want to get this enforced, you have to go district to district. That's exactly the analogy to draw.
Exactly the analogy to draw. Great minds think alike. We're going to continue with Jim Santel, his great mind and yours on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn. We're going to discuss the Jim Comey assertions of vindictive prosecution and the facts that underlie that claim. They're pretty indisputable when we come back. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined by former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel this hour and at 5 o'clock. Do not go anywhere. We have one of Wisconsin's two MacArthur Grant Foundation award recipients announced just within the last couple of weeks. This scientist from UW-Madison, a professor there, studies climate and meteorology. You know, one of those things that have been left on the Doge cutting room floor, and all of our weather forecasting is getting worse and worse and worse, and they're telling scientists not to research climate. Yeah, we're going to talk about that with one of Wisconsin's two MacArthur Grant Foundation Award recipients. Can't wait to do that. But Jim, let's get into the Jim Comey's response to his indictment. Again, let's just remind ourselves, it appears that Lindsay Hallian was the only lawyer presenting this to the grand jury, which is super unusual.
It is.
She's the only one that signed on to the indictment. The grand jury in that case no-billed the top count of the indictment, which is also virtually unheard of. This is coming there is a huge list of charges that have been brought against regular people that federal grand juries have no-billed. It's now happening with great frequency, a lot of them coming in U.S. D.C. U.S. Attorney Jeannie Pirro's district, resulting from the National Guard. But Comey is now making a case. He filed his brief yesterday in his criminal prosecution saying, this is a vindictive prosecution. And vindictive prosecutions, we'll get into what this means, but basically a president cannot, or a prosecutor themselves, cannot use the powers of law enforcement and prosecutions to go after their political enemies. It violates people's equal protection rights. And one of the things that I wanted to point out so that I do not miss this point later is, MAGAs, I would like you to go find me a single criminal defendant. Yes. In all of the January 6th cases, in Donald Trump's myriad criminal cases, in his civil enforcement actions that barred him from conducting any charity corporate work in the state of New York, I want you to go find me a single one where any defendant even tried to raise vindictive prosecution and hint the answer is zero. And the reason the answer is zero is they could not even make the most bare bones minimum factual allegations to try to raise this claim. By the way, Tish James is going to do this. I have absolutely no doubt that Bolton will do this.
Yes, yes.
There seems to be a little bit more there to Bolton's indictment. But the rebuttal to that is his book and these papers that he had basically had cleared through the security apparatus. But Jim, I thought we should kick off this afternoon's discussion
right.
of vindictive prosecutions in the case of former FBI Director Jim Comey by reminding us all that Donald Trump doesn't know if he needs to follow the Constitution. Take a listen.
Don't you need to uphold the Constitution of the United States as president?
I don't know. I have to respond by saying again, I have brilliant lawyers that work for me, and they are going to obviously follow what the Supreme Court said.
I can't even listen. First of all, no, they're not.
It's stunning, right?
He literally took an oath to, quote, uphold the Constitution, and the guy doesn't know if that's his freaking job. So, Jim, you are a former federal prosecutor. In your entire time as a federal prosecutor or as a line prosecutor, have you ever seen a claim of vindictive prosecution brought?
They come up infrequently. I've never seen one granted. They're exceedingly, extraordinarily hard to win. Why? Maggie, you and I, your listeners, I suspect, have got this right as well. A defendant, to be successful in doing this, has to show the government, the prosecutors, assistant U.S. attorneys, DAs, have shown some animus. What does that mean? That's anger. I don't like you. I want to get you. While they were seeking some rights or pursuing something else out there, and that these particular charges, the criminal charges against them, would never have been brought except for that. That's an extraordinarily high burden because almost always, as you indicated, with respect to the Bolton indictment, almost always there's something else really at the core of the cases to suggest that there's merit to it, right? Here, I'll go on a limb. I suspect you will too, my friend, and say, this motion has some legs. And if I were the judge, not only would I conduct, obviously, maybe an evidentiary hearing, although you don't need to do it, you can decide just on the basis of what the attorneys have filed. But this particular motion, vindictive prosecution, when you identify some of the things that the president has said, going back to 2017, to the time that he celebrates this indictment saying, justice in America, it's all in this motion. It's what you and I predicted. And it establishes that this president, who speaks regrettably now on behalf of the Department of Justice and the entire government, not only hates James Comey, wants him prosecuted, he bemoaned the fact that he was not being prosecuted in a timely fashion, calls him a slime ball, a piece of garbage. He should be in jail. He goes on and on and on. This has got merit to it. And do not be surprised if this particular judge looks at this and says, extraordinary to do, here, textbook case almost of defining and investing in that definition exactly what vindictive prosecution is all about.
So I've got some sound of Donald Trump talking about how much he loves Jim Comey. We're going to play that in a second. But to remind everyone who may not be a legal scholar or lawyer, there are two things that have to be shown to defeat a criminal charge on the basis of a claim of vindictive prosecution. First is that there is genuine animus towards the defendant, basically that it's a personal grudge. Second, that the defendant would not have been charged but for that animus, okay? Now, in a moment, I'm going to play the sound of Donald Trump amply demonstrating his personal animus against Jim Comey. And by the way, the underlying facts of this charge are like so stupid. I'm just going to say it. I'm not even going to discuss the merits of the charge. If he does go to trial, he's going to beat it because they can't prove the case. But here are the facts, okay? Each one of the things that I am about to tell you, it's not an opinion. Even if you're a MAGA, if you go look for it, you will find this fact. In other words, it is an objectively provable true thing. I know everybody thinks that we've got alternative facts. We don't. There are still objectively provable true things. These are all objectively provable facts. And keeping in mind the standard, right, to defeat a criminal prosecution based on a claim of vindictive prosecution, again, grudge, and you would not have been prosecuted but for the grudge. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, here are the facts. Fact one, President Trump has installed his former personal lawyers and advisors as high-level officials in the DOJ. Fact two, public reports have emerged that the DOJ was investigating Mr. Comey on July 9th. The following day, on July 10th, President Trump referred to Mr. Comey as crooked as hell, truly bad and dishonest people. Maybe they have to pay a price for that. On July 16th, the DOJ fired Jim Comey's daughter as an assistant U.S. attorney, which came just 3 months after she had received her latest in a long line of outstanding performance reviews and had just been, the day before, asked to lead a critically important public corruption case. A team of career prosecutors from the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of Virginia around this time were investigating Jim Comey. Their key witness, Mr. Richman, was, quote, not helpful to building their case. They even talked to Special Counsel Durham, whom Biden's Attorney General Merrick Garland had appointed to basically try to dissuade any accusations of favorable treatment, to investigate these people that Donald Trump had been attacking during his first term, including Jim Comey. Here's what Special Counsel Trump lackey Durham, during this newest investigation, said that his investigation had not uncovered any evidence supporting charges against Mr. Comey. The career prosecutors in the Eastern District of Virginia's office, they concluded that no criminal case should be brought against Mr. Comey. At the same time, the Western District of Virginia started a different investigation against Mr. Comey because one wasn't quite enough. The interim U.S. attorney selected by Donald Trump was forced out after he refused to demote or remove a career prosecutor who did not believe that the Western District of Virginia should pursue any charges against Mr. Comey, and that prosecutor resigned as well. So again, folks, Western District of Virginia, not one but two prosecutors ended up resigning under pressure from Donald Trump. The top prosecutor there was a Donald Trump pick. Back to the Eastern District. U.S. Attorney Eric Siebert, this is an interim Trump-picked U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Virginia, who had nominated him also to be the permanent U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Virginia. Guess what he said? I don't think we should prosecute this case. And then Donald Trump told reporters in the Oval Office that he wanted Mr. Siebert out. And Mr. Siebert resigned on September 19th. Western District of Virginia, a Trump-picked prosecutor, they refused to proceed. They were gone. The Eastern District of Virginia, they refused. They were gone. The next day, oh, by the way, after the Eastern District of Virginia acting or interim U.S. attorney resigned, they then fired the first assistant U.S. attorney who would have taken over an acting role. More on that in a second. The next day after Siebert was gone, Donald Trump attempted to private message Pam Bondi to give her the list of enemies, including Jim Comey, that he wanted her to prosecute ASAP, except, oops, he pressed the wrong button and posted it publicly to Truth Social. And less than 48 hours after that order from the president to Attorney General Bondi, a crackerjack lawyer, Lindsey Halligan, was sworn in as the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District. And 2 days after that, Jim Comey was indicted by a grand jury. These are the facts. We're going to listen to Donald Trump's hatred of Jim Comey in a big old montage when we come back. Don't go anywhere. This discussion continues with you and Jim Santel and me on the other side. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
I have now returned to my calm state to finish this discussion about Jim Comey's motion filed yesterday, alleging unassailable objective facts that he is being subject to a vindictive prosecution. To succeed on a claim of vindictive prosecution, to defeat a criminal charge, you have to prove that it was basically personal beef and that you wouldn't
I want to get you.
Yeah. And that you wouldn't have been charged but for that personal beef. Here are the facts. Two different federal districts, the Western District of Virginia and the Eastern District of Virginia, pursued investigations. So did Special Counsel Durham during Biden's presidency. All of these career prosecutors in both the Eastern and the Western District of Virginia said there's nothing here. The two prosecutors in the Western District of Virginia ended up resigning. Two prosecutors in the Eastern District of Virginia ended up resigning or being fired. He then picked his insurance lawyer to install as a U.S. attorney, which, by the way, such installation is illegal. There's some federal code about that. That's a whole nother thing. But then she and she alone presented this to a grand jury within days of her being placed into the acting or interim role. The jury, grand jury, no-billed one count. She alone signed the indictment. And now let's listen to Donald Trump attack Jim Comey.
Comey and all this, you know, sleazebags.
Comey lied to everybody.
Brennan.
We fired Comey, that fraud.
That phony, crooked Comey.
Comey should hang his head in disgrace.
Comey is a dirty cop.
Comey is a corrupt person.
One of the best things is firing James Comey's ass out of there.
He's a leaker.
Comey, who's the worst?
They lied to Congress many times. You know, Comey and all those guys.
Comey lies and leaks. He's a liar and he's a leaker. Is this guy being looked at? But we're going to straighten it out.
A guy like Comey, who's a sick man. I mean, Comey's a sick man. The one person I did a very good thing in firing was the dirty cop Comey. There's something wrong with him. But it's all coming out, and I love to watch it step by step, day by day.
Comey's a liar and a leaker. I did you a great favor when I fired this guy.
And it goes on and on and on. To my conservatives that are listening, they're like, what about this? What he got charged for? Career prosecutors handpicked by Trump refused to indict him for. Why? Because lawyers lose their licenses when they do stuff like this. And he picked a know-nothing, never prosecuted a criminal case in her life, insurance lawyer. And by the way, her presentation to the grand jury was so confusing that the judge had to try to figure it out. It was a mess. And I just want to say this. Once a defendant provides direct evidence of an improper motive, and we just heard some of that direct evidence, okay? That beef, that personal motive, can be presumed if the circumstances show a, quote, realistic likelihood of vindictiveness. And when that happens, the burden shifts to the government to present objective evidence justifying its conduct. Jim Comey is going to get to depose those former federal prosecutors, is he not, Jim Santel?
You know, probably discovery, you bet, that kind of thing. Judge Michael Nachmanoff, who is the presiding judge here, obviously going to give both parties, but a great leave, but obviously wants to explore this, to your good point, Maggie, because here's another little factoid inside all this. There is so much, could have gone on obviously for 20 minutes, that the judge extended the page limit to incorporate all of these things that show vindictiveness so that he's got a complete record on it. That's a judge who wants to know everything, and he's got it now. And again, this burden shifting, what is the government going to say? The president never said these things? What is the response to this? There is none. And so once again, we go back to this fundamental notion. And an extraordinary motion under normal circumstances could well be granted here. Maybe it goes up to the Court of Appeals. A great record, Judge Nachmanoff will develop. And Court of Appeals could very well, from this record, affirm that. This case may go away. again, before it's even going to trial, but on this basis of vindictive prosecution, the president himself set up the demise of the very prosecution he was advocating for. That's the history of this in our nation in 2025.
I mean, nobody can dispute that the president has, quote, genuine animus toward the defendant. It's all he does is foam at the mouth about this guy. And here's the thing, the due process clause of our Constitution, its entire purpose is to prevent government officials from abusing their power to target their political enemies. That is legitimately why it was created. It's not due process for due process's sake, but it was created so that a king, you know, the place that we left in good old merry old England with kings, they would train the power of the monarchy on people they didn't like and lock them up in the Tower of London. Kings beheaded people in France for years. Our founding fathers saw the horrors of the divine right of monarchs for centuries. This was the point of due process. And I'm going to quote very briefly. The United States attorney is the representative not of an ordinary party to a controversy, but as of a sovereignty whose obligation is to govern impartially. Its obligation to govern at all is tied to governing impartially, and whose interest, therefore, in a criminal prosecution is not that it shall win its case, but that justice shall be done. Thank you, Jim Santel, Warrior for Justice. Every Saturday from 9 to 11, you can find his show Amicus across the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned. We discuss the MacArthur Grant winner out of the UW-Madison next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.